Welcome to the SBS Digital Learning Hour, brought to you by the Digital Learning and Assessment Department. We're coming to you today from a conference room in Central Office, bringing you the latest news in Springfield Public Schools in regards to technology, along with inspiring interviews from teachers who are using technology in the classroom. I am your host, Mike Thomas, the Bearded Tech Ed guy. You can find me out on all the socials at Bearded Tech Ed, the My SPS We Learn page and the blog and a few other spots there, and also on my own personal blog, beardedtecheduy.com. So before we get into today's awesome interview, I just want to make sure that you are aware of a few different announcements. A couple of those announcements that have come out in the last couple of weeks is all about multi-factor authentication. If you're not sure what that is, it basically helps protect your account and helps you not have to sign in as much, but also make sure that you're very secure. So if you're not sure, go out to the news and announcements on the MySPS page, read those articles. There's also a survey out there for the budget looking towards next year. If you want to have a voice in that, make sure that you are going out there and voicing your opinion through the survey. If you check out the We Learn blogs, you'll see a couple of our latest updates on blogs. Since the last time we talked here on the podcast, there's been a few different blog posts that have gone out. One, the latest one, is all about Sway and how you can use Sway in the classroom. It's a really cool tool. And then there's also one about Nearpod, what it is and how you can use it too. And that's kind of the stuff that we like to provide on the blog, is practical ways to use the technology in the classroom and some more background information. If there's tools that we have in the district that you'd like to learn more about, make sure that you drop us a note in the chat, on our Yammer, wherever you're needing to get a hold of us. You can even go out to Team Dynamics, to the staff help desk, and message us there. Also, I want to point out the 22 tools for 2022. The leaderboard is up and running, and we've got a number of teachers who have already started to complete some of these challenges. Now, the challenges are all based around things that you're already doing in the classroom and tools that you already have access to using. Our front runner right now is a teacher over at Beale. We have a lot of elementary teachers that are currently represented, so I want to see some more high school and some more middle school teachers. So if you want to get cool badges and credit and even entered in to win prizes, that is something that you can do as long as you are participating here in our 22 tools for 2022. If you're wondering what happened in the last one, you can check out our newsletter, which we also post out on MySPS along with Yammer and out in Schoology. We actually posted the winner of the previous month. The next month winner, that would be here in March. They'll be announced later this week, and we will get into, I'll be mailing out their prize pack to them. We'd love for you to participate. There's a lot of great tools. You're already doing a lot of these things, so why not get credit, get badges, and you can easily add those, of course, to your seeds as your professional development and growth. So for today's interview of the week, I am super excited to bring you NJ Ravalis. NJ is a teacher over at SCOTA. NJ has come to us from the eastern side of the state with an awesome background, and I can't wait for you to hear it. So let's go ahead and jump right in.
So I don't play baseball. My sport in high school is competitive robotics, not any actual typical sport. My name is NJ Ravalis. I'm teaching from the Conservatory of the Arts in Springfield. It's an amazing school. I will be talking a lot about how we integrate computer science and the arts and everything. I've been teaching full-time for 5 years. So this is my fifth year full-time teaching. I taught for a couple years in Arlington near Boston. I taught for a couple years in Holyoke, and this is my first year in Springfield, and I am super happy to be here. Before that, I have a master's degree in electrical engineering, and I used to do neuroscience research at Massachusetts General Hospital. So my background is not in teaching, but I started volunteering with after-school clubs like Girls Who Code, running big workshops with Black Girls Code, and I loved it. And I was really interested in curriculum design and how we can teach computer science younger. And so when I got hired in Arlington, I started teaching sixth grade digital media literacy and building out their pathway. So they have a 6-12 pathway. And now I'm trying to do the same here in Springfield. So I teach at the Conservatory of the Arts, which is a grade 6-12 magnet school where we focus on the arts, but there is the opportunity for typical academics as well as computer science and other higher level classes. So I'm really excited to be here and excited to talk about what we're doing.
Wow. So you've got quite the extensive background. I want to address the first thing that you mentioned, robotics in high school. So you are already using technology in school before you even had the dream or thoughts of becoming a teacher. So what did you do with robotics? Was it like BattleBot robotics? Was it like problem solving robotics?
Yeah. So in my high school, I had the privilege of taking electronics classes for 4 years. Big shout out to Mr. Bacon, who was the best teacher. And we learned everything. We learned how all different electronic components worked. We got to etch our own printed circuit boards. You know, it was an incredible experience. And from there, we developed a robotics team and we competed in the VEX competitions. And we competed in something called BEST, which was Boosting Engineering Science and Technology, which we made it to regionals on. So I got to go to Alabama and, you know, compete at a bigger level. And we competed in the Trinity firefighting competition. So I went to school in West Hartford, Connecticut. And so Trinity College is nearby, but they host an international competition where the challenge is to make robots that can navigate a maze that sort of simulates a house and put out a candle simulating a fire. Because for a long time, it's been thought, oh, it would be amazing if we could have robots that could serve as firefighters. So that was an amazing sort of intro to engineering and real world applications in high school. That is why I was able to major in electrical engineering. Without that, I would never have been confident pursuing that. My grades in high school were not great. You know, I was sort of a B, C kind of student. I failed pre-calc when I was a junior. And I decided to go to college for engineering because the robotic stuff was so exciting to me. So I did end up pursuing that. And then I went and I got interested in a specific part of electrical engineering called signal processing, which is all about the math behind things like radio waves, things like sound waves, and also things like brain waves. So it actually, the same kinds of filters that you could do on a guitar recording, you can actually filter recordings of brain signals in similar ways to find different interesting patterns in them. So I got into neuroscience research and I did that for a while and it was great. I loved working at Mass General, but I was more excited about the teaching that I was doing for fun, for volunteer work, than I was about my research at the time. So I figured I would try, you know, see about doing it full time. And I absolutely loved it.
Back in high school, how did you know that you wanted to even take any of those engineering classes? Was there a counselor that suggested it? Was it something that, so how did you come to that in high school, which led to all this great stuff afterwards?
That's a great question. And it is such an important part of the STEM pipeline. My high school, when we were in eighth grade, we toured the high school. And so you get walked around this enormous building and you get to see all of the art studio classrooms and different things. You know, we had ceramics, you know, band stuff. I also did performance arts. I played flute for a long time. And so you get to see all these different classrooms and science labs and things like that. And the electronics classroom was like in the basement, far away from everything else. And the teacher was just so friendly and engaging. He was a Vietnam vet who was just very chill, very down to earth. We kind of just got along well immediately. And so it wasn't a guidance counselor. And I was one of the, you know, I was in the gender minority for sure in those classes. But I was a pretty stubborn student. And so I didn't let that get me down. When I was a senior, I actually got to be the captain of our robotics team. It was otherwise, you know, an all-male team. And it was great. It was a great environment. It was very, you know, hands-off. Mondays and Fridays, we got to work on our own personal projects, you know, and Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday was more, you know, to do book learning and structured labs and stuff like that. But it was fantastic. I still have my notebooks from those classes and it was stuff that served me well for, you know, things in college. And actually also now just in my own personal life, there's been sort of a resurgence of analog synthesizers as being a fun musical instrument. And so I understand a lot about how analog synthesizers work, much more so than most people. So that's been really neat for me.
That's awesome. So in thinking about that experience, I'm going to kind of jump around in your timeline just a little bit. Knowing that you're at conservatory, which is a 6 through 12 school, you don't really have the opportunity to do the touring aspect, which kind of encouraged you to pursue something which became a passion. How are you, or how is conservatory actually working that process? Because I know that there are 34 elementary schools and they all funnel to all of the middle schools, which conservatory would be a middle school first for them. So how is conservatory kind of doing that tour thing to expose students to everything?
Yeah, so I'm not part of guidance or scheduling. I actually just emailed our admin this week to talk about what I might be teaching in fall. I'm certified in math and science as well as computer science, so I can be pretty flexible with what I teach. But the way it is right now, sixth graders can take, well, they do take a semester of all different arts and sort of like specials courses. Mm-hmm. So that is like band, choir, orchestra, dance, visual arts, theater, my class, which is computer science, and I might be forgetting someone, but we have a whole bunch of different, you know, arts focus at the conservatory that the sixth graders get to experience. So next week, I get a new batch of sixth graders, which I'm very excited about. So I don't reach every sixth grader because of how the schedule works, but I do get several. And my computer lab happens to be located near the cafeteria, so it's sort of a high traffic area. And so a lot of students who don't have me still know me because I'm at my threshold. I'm saying hi to students. They can see that there's nice computers here. We have 16 beautiful desktop computers, which I'm very thankful for. And, you know, so there's student interest. And I started a digital media arts club for after school because some students wanted to work on their projects beyond class. So Thursdays after school, it's just kind of like an open workshop. You know, I'm here in the computer lab to help facilitate, but students have different projects, different animation or video game design projects that they want to pursue. So I can help with that. So that's been a really wonderful thing. A lot of it depends on having the computer lab space.
Hmm. Yeah, I think especially as we're going forward in the district, computer labs were a thing and then they became not a thing. And now there's starting to be that push for them to become a thing again. I know from my experience, I have one of the most powerful laptops in the district and I crash it all the time when I'm working on video projects. So I can't imagine students being able to even do half of what I can do with my laptop because their laptop is not even a quarter of the power that I have. So having those desktops where you can kind of cycle in processors and cycle in different motherboards and all of that is very important. Are there things that you've pulled from, like I said, I'm jumping back and forth here. When you were out in the Boston area and you were volunteering, are there things from that time that you're doing now? Or are these two completely different things?
Yeah, so I started volunteering actually. I went to college in New York City and I started volunteering then also. And so there's all different styles of how to teach computer science. So I was teaching after school at urban, obviously in New York City, magnet school in Harlem, where they had me every week come in and I had a group of, I think it was fourth and fifth graders. And Girls Who Code provides some curriculum, but it's not especially designed with students from Harlem in mind. At the time, I think they've improved things much since then. This would have been like 2013, 2014. And so I was modifying a lot of things to make them more relevant for, you know, students who wanted to make programs to model how to change their fingernail polish color or do different things about how to tell stories that are relevant for them. And so that was sort of my first exposure to trying to make curriculum that's relevant to different students, different types of students. And I loved it. I connected really well with those students and I was sad to leave them behind when I moved to Boston. In both Boston and New York, I worked with Black Girls Code, which tends to run bigger, like one day workshops. So it would be, you know, an all day on a Sunday kind of event. And those are typically sponsored by Google or by UMass or something that's sort of a larger organization to host and provide materials. So in that case, I mean, it was amazing. We were able to, with the support of a company like Google, provide, you know, we can do app development where every girl in the room, you know, 100 girls all get to use an Android phone, you know, for the day, at least, to develop an app and test it immediately. You know, having that access to technology is such an important piece of all of this. So that was really great. And I got to see what kinds of curriculum other people were developing and starting to grow my network there. I also used to work with Coder Dojo, where I started leading classes. That was more in, I guess I started in New York City, and then in Boston, there's Charles River Coder Dojo is a big thing. And I sort of went in all different directions and tried stuff. So sometimes I was teaching more intro level things, and sometimes I would teach sort of special topics in, you know, more advanced Python coding and stuff like that, and seeing how students responded, what they were interested in. It was really cool. But I wanted to make more of an impact than that, because after school clubs are great, but I think that it needs to be a core part of the curriculum. It needs to be taught in schools during the day for credit, you know, to reach students who don't have transportation after school or need to work or do any number of other things. So I'm really happy that Springfield is investing so much in digital literacy and computer science.
Me too. It's a lot of my job with like using Girls Who Code. And is it Black Girls Who Code? Is that, I just want to make sure
Yeah, it's all their names are quite similar. So Girls Who Code is an organization. Mm-hmm. And then Black Girls Code is a separate organization.
Black Girls Code. Okay. So I know that Girls Who Code started in 2012. So you were like pretty much on the floor of using that. Did the other program also start at the same time, or was that like a couple of years later when they saw that Girls Who Code was lacking a couple of things?
Yeah, it must have been approximately the same time. I moved to Boston in 2015. So I had already done, so it might have been that Girls Who Code was 2012 and Black Girls Code was 2014 or something like that. I don't know off the top of my head. But they're similar and both just excellent foundations and programs. And there's more and more of that happening. But, you know, I'm so glad that Springfield isn't just having this as an after school club, but is really implementing it throughout the curriculum.
Yeah, I know there's a number of elementary schools who have actually started Girls Who Code programs. So hopefully some of those students will be coming your way. Yeah. So in thinking about curriculum and curriculum development and how you've had kind of the ability to have a wide range of experiences with that, when it comes to what you're doing this year at the conservatory, and are you able to, I mean, I feel like you're probably able to kind of build your own curriculum right now. Have you thought of a pathway for students from 6 to 12 yet? Or are you just starting with one grade and then add another grade on afterwards?
So this year I'm teaching that sixth grade, one section of the sixth grade semesterized class. I'm teaching two sections of a mixed seventh and eighth grade cohort. And then I'm teaching a high school music production class. And I'm also facilitating a dual enrollment class with STCC. So that's sort of what my year looks like this year. Next year might be quite different. Mm-hmm. But my goal is to build out a program where sixth grade is that digital media and literacy foundation. And so I have developed, and I'm going to pilot with my next cohort starting next week, 45 days, we have block scheduling. So 45 days is half the year of digital media and literacy. And so that is, what is a computer? You know, how do computers do color? What is a pixel? You know, lots of different things like that, as well as sort of very intro web development, because HTML and CSS are actually pretty accessible for a sixth grader. They don't rely heavily on math. They're pretty intuitive. And it's very satisfying for students to be able to produce a website. And so that's sort of where I start with things. And then my vision for seventh and eighth grade, because the schedule here is sort of a mixed cohort of seventh and eighth, I would probably alternate years where one year we're doing a focus on game design, and then the other year we're doing a focus on more digital media arts. So we have access to the Adobe Creative Cloud Suite, which is awesome. And so doing a whole year of how to use Photoshop and Illustrator and Animate and Premiere Pro and things like that, which isn't traditionally considered computer science, but is really high interest for art students and our important digital literacy skills. And then a year that's more focused on the more rigorous computational thinking and how do we make video games with logic that makes sense and things like that. So that's sort of the middle school vision. And then high school could be more advanced game design, more advanced digital media arts, where I would want students to be pursuing more independent projects. I'm in close collaboration with the visual arts teacher. So we have AP Art, and it's possible for students to do their AP Art portfolios digitally, or for students who are applying for art school. So we have students who want to go to Mass Art for college, and those portfolios can be digital. So I'd love to facilitate that for any students who want access to the computer lab. But on top of that, I mean, my passion is with computer science. So I would like to be teaching the AP computer science classes. So there's AP computer science principles, and there's also some higher level APCS classes. And then the other sort of pet project I have is more around math literacy. And we right now offer the highest level math is the like STCC dual enrollment statistics class, which is awesome. Students can get credit for college level statistics when they're still in high school, which is amazing. However, we don't exactly have a pathway towards calculus. And I would love to be building that out. So teaching pre-calc and calculus in a way that's applied. So how do we do things so that our animation looks better? How do we make a physics engine for a game? How do we make a ball bounce look realistic? You know, different topics like that.
What was it like, or do you know what it was like before you started at conservatory within the computer science realm? Like, was there a base that was already there, or are you creating everything from the ground up?
The reason that I'm teaching music production this year is because one of our music teachers was previously teaching it. And so he had gotten software licenses for a software called Studio One, and he had previously been teaching that and developed a curriculum around it. However, what I noticed this year is that the students who are in my music production class are much more interested in multimedia production. So we've shifted much more towards illustration, towards video production, getting familiar with those Adobe tools to do projects beyond music production. So if a student has music recorded that they want to produce in some way, that's awesome. The Studio One software has built-in loops, you know, it has samples and things built into it. However, asking a high school student to compose music is, you know, that's a high expectation. And I enjoy, you know, playing music on my own. I have experience, you know, being in high school band and, you know, some amateur orchestra stuff after college, but I'm not really someone who can teach a music composition class to the level that students would really need for digitally composing their music. And so I've been pivoting things much more towards the visual arts and multimedia. And that's been getting some pretty good student engagement. And as I said, I've been collaborating with the visual arts high school teacher. So she's doing a unit right now on linear perspective. And I am also doing that. So we have an overlap of students of 10th, 11th, and 12th grade students who are in both of our classes. And so my students are going to be using Adobe Illustrator, where there's a perspective grid tool that'll help them draw their lines correctly and everything. And in her class, of course, they're doing it on paper with rulers, you know, and so being able to reinforce that learning across the arts is really awesome.
That is great. And I feel like we could just keep talking for a while here. I just took a look at the clock there and we're almost out of time before we have to go. So we're definitely going to have you back on the podcast so we can just continue talking and hearing about the things that are going on. My last question before I get to my last question, so the penultimate question. What has been the student response? I know when I've been in some schools that have DL now and they've just started doing coding in the classroom and that, there's a lot of students telling other students about it and getting them excited for when those students get to actually take the course. Do you hear a lot of that from the students, or are they, because you're right next to the cafeteria, so you definitely have that cross going by.
Yeah, I have students who will stop by, poke their head in my room, say hi to me. I had one student ask specifically She wanted to know what the other students were learning so that she could do it on her own because she doesn't have me this year. You know, there's definitely a lot of student interest. And unfortunately, as I said, I tried to have this after school club opportunity, but right now we don't have late buses. And so transportation because of COVID is a big issue. So it's pretty tricky. I have a couple high school students who can stay because they can drive or they can have, you know, friends or family pick them up. But for a lot of students, that's not a very accessible option right now. But yeah, the students definitely talk about it. And I've had students asking me what I'm teaching next year, which unfortunately I don't know yet. So for instance, I have eighth graders and this year I don't teach any ninth grade. So just the way the schedule worked out, ninth graders don't have the opportunity to be in my class right now. And so my current eighth graders are like, wait, what's going to happen next year? And so I'm trying to work with admin to figure out ways so that, you know, ideally everyone has at least some chance. We can be pretty flexible because it's a small school. So like my music production class has 10th, 11th and 12th graders in it. So it's possible to work that out in different ways. Ideally, I'd love to see them hire a second teacher. So for most of the arts in the school, for dance and music and, you know, other arts, you know, visual arts and things like that, there's two teachers. There's a middle and a high school teacher for the most part. It's sometimes a little mixed, but there's two teachers to cover all the grades. And so I would love for Springfield to keep investing in this and be able to have a second teacher to keep offering more.
Yeah, I will. I know I'll definitely pass that along. And I know Mr. Kelly is usually pretty good about getting the right staff and the right tools into the building. So. All right. So my last question before we run out of time and you have to go teach your next class. Once COVID hit and we started learning through the digital learning playbook, one of the first things they talked about was teacher self-care, because if you're not taking care of yourself, you're going to have a harder time taking care of your students who definitely need us. So that has inspired this last question of what are you doing to take care of yourself outside of school? Because as teachers, it's easy to get there at 7 a.m. and not leave till 7 p.m.
So one of my favorite things to do is gardening. I live out in Amherst. We have a beautiful home and we have an incredible amount of things to do outside. So it's a little slow in winter. We just got seeds in the mail, so I'll be starting seeds soon. So those won't really go in the ground until later in spring. But, you know, that's a big thing that I really enjoy is the wildlife and plants and taking care of a huge amount of outdoor space and getting my vitamin D, getting my sunlight, and being able to grow things I can eat and then cook with. So I also do a lot of cooking. I have celiac and some other dietary restrictions. And so I do a lot of home cooking and that's really fun for me. So those are the things that I'm doing, keeping busy with. But yeah, it's definitely really important. And I hope that, you know, as the district is thinking about more hiring, more computer science programs, you know, the more staff we have, the more it helps, you know, the more that takes the burden off an individual teacher to develop all the curriculum, you know, so that we can share and network and have resources that are across the district.
That is true. What's your favorite thing to grow?
My favorite thing to grow is strawberries because they multiply like crazy. if you've never seen strawberries, you can start with one strawberry plant and it'll just take over. And it is really impressive. Those are some very hardy plants. You can have ever-bearing strawberries that grow not exactly all year round. They won't grow in January, but I got strawberries in November this year, which was very exciting.
I think it also helped that there really wasn't much snow either. So,
Yeah,
I love growing peppers. I make hot sauce all the time. So,
oh, nice. Yeah, some of the seeds that I just got that I'm excited about are habanada seeds. Oh. Someone has bred habaneros to not be spicy but have flavor, and so I'm really fascinated to check that out.
That is fascinating because habaneros are hot. They make for great hot sauce. So,
yeah.
Well, thank you for your time. I know we're in the middle of the day, so I hope you enjoy the rest of this Thursday.
Thank you. You too. Thanks for having me.
Thank you, NJ, for joining us. Like I said at the end of the episode, we are definitely going to have you back. You're doing a lot of awesome things in the classroom. and your background is really cool. And I am super excited to learn more about it. I'm sure our listeners are too. So thank you again all for listening to this episode of the SBS Digital Learning Hour. I am super glad that you're here. One thing that we want to do is help promote this podcast. So make sure that you are subscribed, you're leaving us some reviews, some ratings, and share it with other teachers, share it with other family members, share it across the world. We would love to be able to spotlight what's happening here in our small city of Springfield and point out all the amazing things and all the amazing teachers that are happening. And to get the word out, we really need you to be a part of that. So share, subscribe, rate, review, whatever platform you're listening to this episode on, we'd love for you to be able to share that out. I think Spotify even now has the ability to leave at least ratings, which also helps us move up the charts so that people can find our content, find these awesome interviews. So that's it for this week. I'll see you in a couple weeks with our next interview. I'm Mike Thomas, the Bearded Tech Ed Guy, and this is the SBS Digital Learning Hour. The SBS Digital Learning Hour is written, directed, produced, edited by Mike Thomas from Digital Learning Assessment, a part of OITA here in Springfield. If you like the music that you're hearing in this episode, the artist is Risen. Check out our show notes to follow the artist out on SoundCloud or wherever you like to listen to music.